Italian Wine Podcast. Cin Cin with Italian Wine People.
Hello, this is the Italian Wine Podcast. My name is Monty Wald, and my guest today is podcaster extraordinaire Chris Scott. Chris, welcome.
Hi, Monty, how are you?
It's the first time you've ever been called extraordinaire, isn't it?
Yeah, it's the first time I've been interviewed for a podcast.
You're joking?
No.
Seriously?
No, I do all the interviewing normally and not the...
Does your wife not interview you sometimes?
No, we just do the news together.
The news?
Yeah.
Right, we'll come on to that. Now, listen, you have many strings to your bow.
Yep.
And the last time I saw you, I seem to remember we talked about podcasts. Because you interviewed me, that was about 3-4 years ago.
Yeah, it's about that.
And you did give me some tips, didn't you? So your
Probably.
Royalties, you've got that house in the Cayman Islands now, thanks to me.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you know, the multiple houses in New York, you know.
So it's good. You know, I still have to sweep the loos here at the Vinci building, you know, just to get my podcast.
I've just met your boss, Stevie Kim, and she's
ruthless.
Oh yes, yeah. She was saying, you know, he does what he's told when he's told.
Yeah, I have to. Otherwise, I get fired and I'm on the street. Now, so you have the world's longest running wine podcast. So just give
longest continuous wine podcast. Yeah.
Right, go on. Just tell us a bit about that.
So I can't remember the year I started. Actually, it was around 2003 or 2004 or 2005, something like that.
So you are one of the earliest podcasts.
One of the earliest podcasts. Yeah. So podcasting had just started out, and I thought, oh, I'm an electrical engineer. I like this sort of stuff. My wife told me I had a face for radio, so
she's
I was
not wrong.
Yeah. So I thought, do you know what? I'm getting into this because my buzz is really about learning. And I'd done my WCT qualifications, and I'd stopped learning. And I was like, how do I get to learn? And the easiest way of getting to learn was to interview people who know lots about stuff. So I decided I would start podcasting and just talk to people about wine.
So you're killing two birds with one stone.
Two birds with one stone.
So where are you from originally with that accent? You're from Australia, aren't you?
Yeah, mate, I'm as much from Australia as you are from Sardinia. No, I'm a Kiwi from New Zealand, and proud of that. I've got some family in Australia, so I spend a bit of time in Aussie.
And Mrs. Scott, is she from New Zealand as well?
No, she's English, which is why I live in London now. So we had a choice of living in New Zealand or London, and she won the bet.
So when you started your podcast, which is obviously one of the most lucrative things on the planet, was she thrilled by that? You know, mortgages, kids, that kind of thing?
She was a little bit... Most of the stuff, when we start something new, I do a lot of the new product development in our business. And to be honest, don't tell Jane this, but most of the stuff, she's like always a little bit, oh, this is not good, this is not good, this is not good, and a bit negative. And then after a while, she gets behind it and she's like, oh, this is brilliant, and she gets into it. So yeah, she's never 100% sure about new stuff, but then once we get into it, she either tells me it's wrong, we have to stop it, or she gets on board.
Right, so you do a podcast, and what about the wine educational aspect? Because that has really taken off in general, wine education, and you've been a big part of that, combining audio, and you just teach people direct as well, don't you?
Yeah, so we do. Our business actually started out as a wine tasting company. We were the first company that we're aware of that was willing to go to people's homes and do tastings with them, which is great. And we did that for a while, and then we've done corporate work. We started running our own wine appreciation courses.
How did you get into people's homes? I mean, that's quite not an invasive thing to do, but how did you actually sell that concept to members of the public? Did you start by doing it with friends or friends of friends, or how did you advertise?
Yeah, we started out with doing it with friends, and they're the worst tastings you'll ever do is with your mates, because they just give you a stick. If people don't know you, they're a little bit more respectful, whereas your friends and family are terrible.
Really? But stick about what? About you being too whiny or...?
Oh, just whatever. They're more likely to give you a hard time than
people. That's just joshing though, isn't it?
Yeah, a little bit. When you're nervous and it's your first 3 or 4 tastings, you get really... You know, it can be quite hard. So we did that, but to be honest, our business couldn't have really existed before internet, because Google and the ability to find you on the internet was key to being able to move into people's homes, because the income from a tasting in someone's home isn't enough to really justify radio or TV advertising. So you need to be able to reach an audience in a relatively cheap way. And the search engines are the way to do that.
So you did very little advertising, but word got round that you were kind of, you and your wife, sort of fun tastings at home. Sort of entertainment, isn't it?
Yeah. I always think it's, you know, people won't pay for education, you know. You talk to students who go to university, and they will scream blue murder about paying university fees, but then they'll drink twice the university fees and pee it against the wall and not even think anything about it. So people don't pay for education if they can help it, but they will pay for entertainment. If you can merge merge the two together and give them a really good time, but at the same time they come away with something really solid they know, then that's really the sweet spot for us, and that's what we try and do. So we look for the people who run our events with us, because we've got a team of about 20 people now throughout the UK. We look for people with great personalities that can really engage but also entertain.
To like you, basically.
Yeah.
No, but you are. I mean, no, you are. You're the larger-than-life character. You've got a lot of energy about you. You're a very good communicator. You're fun. You're the kind of person that, you know, I'd like to learn from. You've got that energy. You're not some boring old wine snob boring on about Bordeaux. Do you think that's your new world background that helps that, with that exuberance, or not?
I don't know. I, to be honest, I often class myself as an introvert.
Who's an idiot, then? Finally, answer the question, honestly.
No, because in a group of 10 or 20 people, I can be quite quiet, but put me in front of 100 people, I'm really quite bubbly. Yeah, I don't really understand why.
Did you do theatre at school and things like that? Acting?
No, I'm an electrical engineer, mate.
Okay.
I was hidden in the books studying.
So what about the corporate side? Is that developing quite strongly? And how does that work? Is that very different when you present a tasting to friends in a house, in a private house, or a corporate event? Is it a bit more starchy, sort of smart suits?
No.
Or are they looking to let their hair down as well?
They're looking to let their hair down. Yeah, we really, especially the corporates, you know, it's about fun for them. You know, they want to learn something. Well, often they want to learn something, but often they want to have a bit of fun and taste some nice wines and learn something. So it's about getting the balance right. And I think, you know, you've got to get that balance right if you want to have a really, really a fun business. You know, there are people who run very serious tastings, and that's great, but that's not really my scene.
So you're not turning up with bottles of First Growth Bordeaux, you're turning up with sort of fairly normal bottles, or are you doing some high-end tastings as well?
We do a range. It just depends what the client's budget is and what they want. For me, it doesn't bother me if it's we don't normally go in the UK anyway. £10 is, for me, is about the sweet spot for a wine that's got some interesting attributes, tastes pretty good, nice and reliable, you know. So we normally start around that price point and go up, but we don't, you know, we don't normally do First Growth Bordeaux, although we have in the past. It just depends what the budget is.
So do you get asked for an Italian only wine tasting or wine event?
We have done Italian only tastings in the past. In fact, we used to have a tasting that we sold in as an Italian tasting.
So what was the mix in that one then, roughly?
Well, the way we work is I'm a big man on climate. So I think that climate is the main driver of style of wine. If you think about it, climate drives the grape varieties you can grow in a region, and also drives the style of wine that comes from that. So I'm very much looking at going through Italy from north to south, looking at how the climate changes and how that reflects in the style of the wines that get produced.
It's quite an interesting take though, isn't it? I mean, I can see your logic behind that. Everyone did terroir, would have soil, microclimate, mesoclimate.
Yeah, but people can't understand that. Whereas if you give them a warm climate wine with higher alcohols or more extraction of tannins or something like that from, you know, the southern end.
That was actually somebody having tannins extracted from their teeth. They'd been drinking a lot of Nebbiolo and Brunello over the last couple of days. But they're doing very well, apparently, the doctors tell us.
Yeah.
So, yeah, back to your point about climate.
So if you can understand, you know, how acidity changes and how you can, in a hotter climate, you can, if you want to, extract more tannins and colour and things like that, then people can understand that. But when you start talking about microclimates and all, you know, this limestone soil is slightly different from this gravel-based soil because it's cooler and therefore it makes it slightly different. You know, that's a little bit too much inside baseball for the general public. You know, for you and me, we love that sort of stuff. We understand it. You know, I can look at a vineyard soil and go, okay, that means this and that has effect on the climate because of this and all this. Most people don't care. They just want to have a bit of fun, learn something they can take away that's practical. We give a really dirty blagger's guide.
Steady, this is a family show.
No, we give a dirty blagger's guide on how to value a bottle of wine by tasting it. You know, you can taste a bottle of wine, looking at the length and things like that, you can actually get a rough idea on the price of the wine. And people love that, whereas if I was to go on about limestone versus clay, they really wouldn't give a... They wouldn't care.
They switches them off.
Yeah, it does. And that's for the general public. You know, for the wine geeks, great. But for you and me, for the general public, nah, they're not interested.
But at a tasting, when people come to one of your tastings or have one in their homes, are you giving them some material to take away, like print-offs or anything like that?
No. What we do, they get... We have a PDF, a two-page sheet that we have.
You email them, yeah?
No, if they want it, we'll give them a copy of it.
Oh, I see a physical one, okay.
Yeah, but to be honest, we used to give it out to them, but now most people just take a photo of it. So and it's really good. On one side, it's got just all the common grape varieties, the aromas, and the climatic ranges they grow in, and the flavors that you get from those climatic ranges. You know, if you think about a Chablis, you're going to get sort of an appley flavor, maybe get into lemons, get into Burgundy, into more stone fruits, get into southern France, you're going to get into more tropical fruits. And when people start to see, oh, climate has that, and changes in acidity and alcohol, they can really grasp it. So our sheets are all about really basic stuff like that.
So you also do a lot of work with the Wine and Spirit Education Trust, which is members of the wine trade, maybe people working in shops or in the restaurant
and
industry.
And general public as well, who are really engaged. Yeah.
So that's really taking off, isn't it? So where do you fit in that? What do you offer them?
Okay, so we do three things really. We started out running courses, WC Level 1, 2, and 3, and we run them for the public on Saturdays and trade, and we also run some during the week, mainly for the trade, usually on Mondays. But we changed tack about a year and a half ago and reclassified ourselves personally as a WST service provider. Which, what does that mean? Well, it means that instead of just being running courses, we want to produce materials and educational stuff that people can use anywhere in the world. So the first big product we launched was our WST Level 3 questions. Because when I learned to study for exams, one of the things I learned was do lots and lots of examples of questions. And there really wasn't a really good database of questions. WSD had some, but they expected the different lecturers to provide their own questions. So we produced 500 questions of multi-choice and short answer questions that they can do and mark themselves. And we sell them to people all over the world now for about 20 quid a pop, and it just sells.
So is it like a book or something?
No, do it online.
Right, so basically you have the question, you know, what is the main grape in Pauillac, for example, and then on page 4, and then on page 320 you find the answer.
No. We just have lists of questions, multi-choice questions, and they're divided up. So if you're doing the course, you might read chapter 4, and there'll be a set of questions on chapter 4. And then you do the next chapter, set of questions on chapter 5, blah, 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 blah. The problem is the exam isn't like that. The exam looks at questions from chapter 4 and then compares wines from chapter 4 to chapter 12 and all this sort of thing. So we have questions that are designed to assist you as you're doing the course. And then we have more exam-like questions at the end where they really range over the entire course. And they've been really popular. So
who does the fact-checking on that? Is that you?
I did all the work on that. That took me forever. I mean, there's a reason people don't do it, is because it's so much work. And you really, really, really need... It's a lot of work. And every time they change the book, it's weeks of work.
Has anybody come back and said, Chris, on question number 476...
Yeah, no, there is.
You got the answer wrong.
Yeah, no, that happens. I mean, I've done a lot of work to do it, and my students, we give them to my students, and I tell them, you know, you find a mistake, you get a bottle of wine.
I was going to say, they must get something back.
Yeah, and
you get a kick up the bum.
Yeah, and the first time I said that to them, it cost me a bit of money. But after that, it got less and less and less, and now, you know, we get the odd mistake here and there, but out of 500 questions, it's the best database of questions you'll ever get. So we've done that for the level 3.
So give us a question on Italy. I know it's difficult for you to think of one off the top of your head. Is it like, what is the main grape in Suave?
No, it wouldn't be like that. It might be sort of a deep red, powerful wine, high alcohols and tannins. Is it Suave? Is it Castellagese? Is it Alianico from Basilicata? Or is it a Valpolicella Rapasso?
I'm going to say Valpolicella.
Was that?
I'm joking. It's the Alianico, yeah?
So
you mean put like white wines in there as well?
Yeah. Okay. Because like, to be honest, I know you're an Italian podcast, but some people, you see Suave and people won't know if it's white, red or rosé.
Yeah. So. I used to get that. People work in a wine shop, people would pick it up and say, is that a red wine or a white wine?
Yeah.
Not because they're stupid, just because they don't know. It's like me if I walk into a furniture shop. Is that teak or oak? I don't know.
When you name a wine by a region, it doesn't give an insight. Yeah. Well, Suave, isn't it? Is a grape variety. No, it's not. It's a region.
That's fine. That's £10. Jane, if you're listening to this, I want this. I want £10 of yours.
It's a bottle of wine, mate.
He's done it on air. Actually, we'll give you a discount on air. Yeah.
Yeah, fact checking. You've got to check it. So we did that. We're just about to release a new podcast. Well, one of the things that... is the tasting exam is quite tricky. Mm-hmm. You know, people have never been... If you've never had your taste buds assessed, people really worry about that. So we've produced a series of material. We produced a two-page document we gave to our students with the snappy title of Decoding the WST Systematic Approach to Tasting. So quite a catchy title, that one. And we're just in the process of launching a podcast that complements that.
What's that called, the new podcast?
Well, it hasn't been launched yet, but it
will. Do they breed your podcast? And they just like, they mate every so often. What's the gestation period?
This one's about 12 years. it was born fully formed 12-year-old. The podcast itself, we haven't launched it, but we're about to. It's going to be called 3050s WST Level 3. And it's just support material. So we've recorded, for the UK Wine Show, we've recorded loads of interviews. And at the time when I interviewed them, I had a focus of making sure I asked questions that were relevant to the WST Level 3. So we've got all these content now. So we're going to release that, package it up and release it. And also we've got some very specific content that works with some of our support materials. So
Level 3, I mean, how tough is that in terms of questioning?
It's got a 60% pass rate. It's a 5-day course, and if you work really hard, it's not hard.
So is it multiple choice answers at the end again?
No, it's multi-choice plus written exam.
Right, so go on, give us an example of how difficult that would be.
Okay, so
a question on, say, Bordeaux or something. Or
I'll give you one. You might get a picture of a map of say, Napa Valley, and you'll get a picture of Napa Valley, and you say, describe the difference between this region and this region on the map. And one might be Howell Mountain, which is on the right-hand side, and the other one might be, what's the one on the
left? Marquemus?
I was thinking about the one that links, it's at altitude on the left-hand side between Sonoma and Napa. Brain's gone dead.
Let's try another question then.
but the idea is they can look at the map and they realise, okay, one's facing east, one's facing west, one's at altitudes, one's below
Spring
the
Mountain.
Fog Mountain. No, it's not Spring Mountain. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what it is. But the idea is they need to be able to understand the geological effects that will influence the wine. So if you're below...
So it's quite heavy stuff.
Oh, yeah. You need to know that whether you're below the fog line or above the fog line. Above the fog line, you're going to get more sunshine, so therefore you're going to get riper fruit, riper tannins, more extraction, or potentially more extraction, things like that. So, and if you're facing the evening sun, you're going to get more ripeness as opposed to facing the morning sun. So it's those sort of things that people can sometimes know, but it's very hard to apply. And so it's about being able to apply that. Multi-choice questions are easier.
I mean, were you good at wine exams?
No, my wife did better than me in the exams.
But you got a diploma, I guess. Why don't you do your own Master of Wine?
It's value, really. The pass rate's so low. I talked to WCW a while ago about it, but their pass rate's so low and the cost is so high that to me it was like, I've got to invest 2 to 3 years of my life and the return may be zero, and it's a lot of money. And the other thing was that it's very hard to monetize it. You know, I don't want to become a supermarket wine buyer or any of that sort of stuff. I want to do what I'm doing. So if I do all this work, take a big risk, and at the end of it possibly have nothing to show for it, it won't actually make any difference to my business. So I get my buzz from learning, and I get that from the podcast. So why do I need to continue doing a piece of paper?
And you get it from teaching as well. That's your buzz
yeah.
as well, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Standing up in front of people and talking about booze. Can't get it wrong.
How difficult is it to have a business that you run with your one and only love?
It's not as bad as I would have thought 20 years ago.
Go on, more detail.
Jane, don't listen to this. But no, it's actually all right, because we've got very different roles. She's very accounts, administration, dealing with clients, all that sort of stuff. And I get to do lots of tastings.
You're the showman.
Yeah, tastings. And I do a lot of the new product development and a lot more in the sort of intellectual side of the wine tasting side of things. So we've got very different roles. And I think that clear demarcation of roles makes things a lot easier.
Yeah, that's okay. But you are a very bubbly chap. You know, you've got a lot of charisma and you're a good communicator. So you, someone in wine that you seem like you're really happy with what you do. When I first met you, when you walked out of the door, I remember you interviewed me, I thought, this guy, he's got a great job. You know, he loves what he does.
Yeah.
It's true though, isn't it?
It is.
It's like, I love doing what I'm doing here now with you today, because I get to meet really interesting people.
Yeah.
And but you know, I thought, you know, you fit the job. I love what I do, and I like that's kindred spirit. You're very similar to me, always. And you're incredibly successful, aren't you?
The business is good. The business is good. It's growing. Well, it's always been growing, because we've always been pushing new stuff. But yeah, no, it's like, it's one of those things, as long as you're happy, I'm pretty easy to keep happy, you know, as long as...
You're a man.
Well, yeah, possibly. But as long as I've got what I need, you know, minimum, and I'm busy and I'm learning, I'm pretty happy, you know, and...
How do you deal with all the kind of Italian, you know, people would expect you to know the disciplinary, the rules of every single EGT in Italy. How do you deal with that, the kind of constant changes of the rules? I mean, there's, a thousand different EGTs or whatever in Italy.
All right, so first of all...
Do you have nightmares?
No, because I'm a little bit, this will sound funny, but I'm a little bit autistic in that I'm not very good at names. I just cannot remember names.
My name's John, by the way.
Oh, I thought it was Fred, but okay. But I'm not very good with names, so I accept that. You know, if there's something I have to learn, I'll really, really, really focus on learning it, but I really struggle. So I just don't worry about it. You know, deal with what you can do. Don't worry about the stuff you can't do.
So you basically found a coping mechanism to deal with that.
Yeah, and no, I just don't worry.
Okay.
I mean, I know, like, in Italy, I was talking to Stevie, you know, and it's
Stevie Kim.
Stevie Kim, yeah. And we were talking about sort of, you know, the 1,000 regions and the 500-odd grape varieties and all that sort of stuff. And I have a good working knowledge of Italy, but it's mainly things like what's driving the style of wine in this part of Italy. You know, is it altitude? Is it climate? Is it fresh winds blowing up a valley? Is it whatever? And I've got a very engineering mechanical brain, so I can analyze and understand. I just may not remember the name of the place.
Yeah, the stresses and strains basically on the particular region.
Yeah.
I mean, if you ever made wine, you're from New Zealand, but you're not from a farming background, are you?
I tried to make wine once.
Really? At home?
Yeah, when I was about 12.
With what, beetroot or something?
No, with wine.
I did that with oranges, supermarket oranges.
I crushed some grapes, and I thought, I better not
let table grapes?
Yeah. Better not let my family know. So I put it in a tiny little container under my bed, and I let it ferment, and I grew mold. So I am not a winemaker. When I first got into the wine trade, I thought, maybe I'll get into this winemaking lark, because... You know, it can be very scientific, you know, it's very artistic, but there's a lot of science there, and I quite like the science side of things, but it's just not for me. You know, we thought about following the romance, particularly when the English wine scene started to burgeon, and we thought, maybe we'll go into English wine. But we looked at it, and the capital cost was really high, and the investment and time and effort, and there was just easier ways to make money.
And climate change, the elephant in the room for the UK wine industry.
Not for the
better. It's not necessarily going to get warmer. It will probably get a little bit wetter. So when you are in Italy, final question, on holiday, can you just switch off, or you sit in the restaurant and the waiter or waitress brings over a bottle of wine and you're looking at the back and they're like, this has got 60% Negro Amaro in it, how fascinating. Or will you just forget it and eat your food and have a chat with your wife? And
so the way I slip wines on a wine list...
Price.
A little bit, yeah, because I never go down the bottom end.
Shape of the bottle.
No, I go...
Favourite colour on the label.
No, I go, I don't have a Scooby what that is. If I have no idea what it is, I get it.
Right.
So
good policy.
Yeah, well... You know, you'll end up with some interesting things. You know, you'll check with the sommelier or the waiter if you can. But, I just choose the wine that I have no idea what it is.
Do you studiously write tasting notes on holiday? Just taste it and get that was
No, I just enjoy it.
Yeah, me too. Yeah,
I think... You know,
people switch off sometimes.
Yeah. And also, you know, you taste the wine, you analyse it, you give it a sort of a rough idea of what it is and try and understand it. And that takes all of a couple of minutes. And then you just enjoy it.
Cool. All right, I just want to say thanks to my guest today, Chris Scott, who is a phenomenon, really, in what you do. You know, in terms of your podcast, number one, first one,
yep.
and your educational stuff. And you know, you're a very engaging guy, and you obviously make wine education fun for people, as well as informative. You know, information and education and entertainment. Yeah. You got it wrapped
That's
up.
That's a sweet spot.
It's really good to see you, Chris.
Cheers,
nice one, mate.
Follow Italian Wine Podcast on Facebook and Instagram.